Mike Rabinovich here, and this is the Modelo's Conversations with Data Warehouse Experts podcast series. Our mission in these podcasts is to speak to the best minds in the data warehouse and BI space, and to get their take on the state of the business and find out what they think the future holds. We are also committed to do it in a way that adds value to tech professionals, while at the same time is clear and compelling for the business managers and executives they collaborate with every day. This podcast is brought to you by 7W Data, your go-to portal for all things data. Subscribe free for the latest news and events at www.data.com. That's www.7wdata.com. Follow on Twitter at 7WData. In today's episode, it is my pleasure to welcome Yves Mulkers, a leading BI and data architect based out of Belgium. He's also a well-known social media influencer. In his role, he is founder of the highly regarded 7W Data blog, which curates best-of-class industry content. Welcome, Yves.
Hi, welcome, Mike. Happy to be on the chat.
Great to have you. I'd like to start by asking you to tell us a little bit about your background for listeners who have not had the chance to either hear you speak or read your blog.
Well, background, I can situate a bit where I came from and how I ended up into the data scene. I've been studying chemistry. It was quite a coincidental that I got into the chemistry, but I was passionate about computers and automation stuff. Teach myself to program and came into IT after 6 years working in various operational environments. And with the database stuff of SQL Server, business intelligence, and all the data around it, I finally got to the stage where I'm at right now. It's really into the data architecture, focusing upon data integration and helping businesses move forward with their data assets and how do they should organize all that data stuff.
In the past 5 years, where have you seen the most significant changes in BI and data warehousing?
Well, the most significant changes were mostly on the ETL part, kind of automation where we look at. Different modeling types. We're still with the traditional Kimball and Inman approaches on how you should set up your data warehouse, which aligns a bit with how business looks at concepts and at processes and how information should be organized. But for the rest, everything stays a bit the same and is typically on looking in historical data where you say how much revenue did we got last quarter compared to previous quarter and which are the prognosis for the budget. But not really in the traditional stuff where I see so much changes. I see it more into on the part of data science, on the analytics part, where things are moving really fast forward. You see the introduction of automating the data loads, but not really into the traditional data warehouse, but to be served to the data scientists. I see a lot of new technology coming up. We see evolution of graph databases. We see GPUs coming up and a lot of in-memory processing, which helps as well for not really on the traditional data warehouse and business intelligence part, more on IoT analytics and calculation on the edge.
Speaking of the traditional side you just brought up, what do you think is holding companies up from addressing that? Is it businesses need to do it, or is it a technology issue?
It's never a technology issue. Mostly it's a people issue, and a people issue is because we need to learn to look at different things, learn to work in a different way. So people are very reluctant to change. That's one thing. Another thing is the communication part, where you need the tech-savvy people to communicate with the business people, and the business people don't know what the technical people do, or the technical people don't understand the business. So bringing them both together It was a point of improvement or how you should do business intelligence projects at the time. Recently, I was at an analytics summit and they were discussing how you should form your team for a data science team. And exactly the same things came across. It's communication, putting the right team, the right people together so they can talk and learn from each other. And that's what I see is happening now.
I do want to come back to that topic in a couple of questions. Before we get there, though, I want to ask whether you think that current data warehouse products are adequately addressing the increasing complexity of data that we see out there, as well as the exponential increase in data flows.
Not as such. We see some products, the ETL products, where they are implementing virtual layers, so you don't have to physically move your data, but they're trying to create a meta layer. But there is only a few products that are implementing that kind of approach. If you say there are two points when you say increasing complexity of data. In complexity, I understand the multitude of types of data what you have, which you want to ingest into your data warehouse, data lake, or whatever you try to call it. And traditional ETL parts and data warehouses never anticipated this kind of different type of data. So they're not including video or they're not including high velocity data. So that's where I see still a split between business intelligence and the data science world or the big data world. They're kind of different approaches in the kind of data they're handling, and they're handling it for different purposes as well. But if you look at how big data architecture optimizes stuff, it's quite the same as we do in business intelligence. Apart from this distributed part, which for me is the biggest difference between big data architecture and the business intelligence architecture.
Speaking of data warehouses themselves, there have been some articles over the last few years with some so-called experts saying that the data warehouse is going away. What do you think about that position?
Well, in a certain sense, aligns with what I just previously said. Going away, yes, because we're preparing our data in a different way, or we're sourcing the data towards the consumption in a different way. In that way, you could say the data warehouse is dead, but it still serves a certain typical purpose where you have your traditional year-end financial reporting, or you want to see, you want to slice and dice your type of data, which is not prepared for that. When you say it is that, I more look at your data warehouse, which should be a business representation of your concepts. If you have a product, if you have a revenue, you have customers, you have a geographical organization of your data. And those are the kind of concepts which you still should see into your data warehouse. It's kind of taking all the complex data in there and presenting it to the people that want to consume that data in a very understandable data. So you're taking out a lot of the complexity, what is in their data, cleaning it up, standardizing it, aligning it, and those kind of things. And that should be the role of a data warehouse or whatever you like to call it.
Let's switch gears and talk a little bit about the cloud, which is always in the news these days. What do you think will be the impact on data warehousing projects as companies are slowly moving more and more into the cloud?
Well, it's a bit dual for me, because I've been recently with Hewlett Packard Enterprises, and where they say, okay, there the definition is the cloud is that. Another big metaphor what they throw in. And what do they mean? Okay, we had the hype of moving to the clouds, but now we see that same kind of infrastructure is moving back on premises. So we get a kind of a hybrid IT where you choose a part is really in the cloud and the other part is in your private cloud, which is on-premise. So we see a different move again in that cloud. The advantage of cloud here is that you don't really have the constraints by, for example, procurement. You just go out, you put in your Visa card, you take a subscription to one or the other big data platform, you upload your data, you have it crunched, you get the results, and you're fine. So it's you can move a lot faster in this compared to traditional approach. You don't have to buy the licenses for the next 3-4 years, whatever. You take something in the cloud, let's put it like that, subscription to the platform, you put your data in, you try it out, you see what comes out. If you're happy with it, you can take your subscription and sustain it, whatever, and look into a sustainable solution. So a lot of proof of concepts allow you to move faster and get those insights of, hey, this data is working. If I model it like this, okay, we get this output, and should this be the right platform, or should we move to another platform where it's scalable? Because you have different discussions as well with the cloud, where you say, okay, I put my data up in the cloud with Google, it's fine, it's there, but to get it out of the cloud again, that's the big constraint for the time being.
In addition to your consulting practice, you're also the editor of 7wdata.com, a leading European blog that curates BI content. How did it come about?
Well, it started, I think, about 7 years ago, where we started with a business intelligence community at the time, because we felt that the market was in need of getting those people together, exchanging experiences, being able to talk to your peer and see how it's happening in another company, their approaches. So really, like you had that in the past, the forums, and you still have those, where you come together as individuals about the same topic and you can exchange your experiences. But people still want to meet face to face. So we started up that initiative, and I was doing the social media stuff, playing around with the typical channels like Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn, and started growing my community. But that was, for me, not enough. I could share the interesting articles I could find on the blog, but the idea is still to build that kind of online community. And for me, the only way to do that is on my own platform. So that's why I started off with the 7W Data blog, to one, share the interesting articles about data. So it's simply said, what can you do with data and how should you do that? And that's the kind of message I want to get out by offering people to participate in conferences, to attend workshops, to look for jobs, to interact with each other. So that's the main idea behind 7W Data.
Well, I got to tell you, like, the content that you constantly put out there is really, really solid. So I thank you for that. And I'm sure other people appreciate it as well.
Thank you.
Now, well, I want to, you're welcome. So I want to talk a little bit about data warehouse automation, a topic near and dear to our hearts at DiModlo. How do you think it's changing the delivery of information to the business suite?
Well, especially it should deliver, how you see, there. It never goes fast enough for business, which is completely correct. We need to slow them down from time to time, because if you talk about architecture, you're trying to look at sustainable solutions. And if you want to move fast, you're not paying attention to the sustainability or the scalability or the moving from testing to a production environment. And that's kind of the constraint. Where I see a lot of time and effort has been taken is really typing over the field names and ETL stuff, manually mapping all those things. If something changed, you have to do redo everything. So the testing takes a lot of time as well. And in automation, you could say, okay, this is my sources, this is my destination, we change it, and all the complex mumbo jumbo is automated. And for the standard flows, I've seen a lot of people already a long time back, that's the standard transformation, what they were doing, they had them completely automated. Whereas at that time, people took about 3 weeks to create the standard ETL mappings. And with the automation, it took them 2 days. So a big gain in that simple automation for ETL.
A little bit ago, we were talking about the disconnect between the business managers and the IT folks. In our projects at DiModlo, we often see that the tech teams are pretty knowledgeable, but there's a real knowledge gap on the side of the business managers and executives. If you were to recommend one resource where business folks can go to catch up on that knowledge so they can work better with their IT counterparts, what would it be?
With the source, you mean either a conference or a blog
or exactly?
Yeah. Well, it's a kind of multitude of skills and assets, and I think what you need. So it's for business, but it's as well for IT people. It's not only if you want to do a data project in a correct way, you should be knowledgeable about technology. So maybe as a business person, really follow something really geeky, techy, as a workshop that you understand what is the complexity within the ETL. Do you really need to go out to a blog, or do you need to go out to a platform? I don't think so. Just start with talking to your peers within your company and try to understand what they are doing. And if they say, okay, I'm not capable of doing that, or it takes so much time, try to understand why it takes so much time and try to explain from the business side why you need it so fast. So trying to get an understanding from both parts of the playground that could help in making your data project more successful.
I think that's a great point, because before you even go to a blog or a conference or a video, I think communicating between the two different divisions is always helpful. I think that's a great point.
Yeah, and what I see as well is people try to either put all the kind of skill sets in one person, so they want to be the person to be proficient on SQL, be the perfect business analyst, the perfect project lead, the perfect political stakeholder manager, the perfect developer in one team, or they have for each and every role a separate person or a separate team, but they don't talk to each other, and that's the hard part as well.
And now we get to the portion of the podcast where we have some non-tech fun and we try and get to know our guests a little bit better. So I hope you're ready, Yves.
Yeah, I'm ready.
So the first question, what is go ahead.
Yeah, just we're over the boring stuff, so the fun stuff begins now.
It's exciting to some people, but now we'll get to some even more exciting stuff. So my first question, what is your current go-to TV show that you're watching or binging on right now?
Well, I'm charmed by a Belgian series which is on Belgian channels. It's called Tabula Rasa, and it's about a young person who has amnesia. But what I find so striking, it's very nice filmed. So we have a very good cineast and here in Belgium as well. But yesterday I was looking at the latest show, and I saw, well, just the image of Poltergeist in there, and I saw some other and some 70 thriller movies I saw when I was about 12 years, and I said, hey, this guy really knows his classics, and he put those kind of things in there. But it's very well played, very good actors, and apparently you already had with the premiere release very good remarks internationally as well. So it's nice to see it, something from your own ground which gets international recognition as well. So to say we're a small country, but we can proud of what we produce and get out as well.
Well, I'm going to look it up. So tabula rasa means clean slate in Latin, I imagine.
Yeah, and I think it's exactly where it's leading to if you see how the plot develops.
Right, and how many seasons does it have? Is it just the first season?
It's just the first season, and I don't know if they're really into second seasons, because typically Belgian, it's not like American shows where you get into the seventh edition or whatever.
So right.
Let's see how it develops.
Next question. What is the best non-tech book you've read in the past few months that you would recommend to all your friends?
That's the big problem. I'm not such a big book reader or reader at all. So I really have to force myself into non-techie books because the only stuff I read is techie books.
Right.
Recently I read a kind of good book, and that was on the other thing I'm involved with is on influencer marketing. which points out of what are the benefits of influential marketing, which is not so technical, but it's more on the marketing side, but still a bit on the geeky side in that respect. But it was, it was about
influence. Do you remember the name?
It's called Influence, I think, yeah.
Was it the one by Robert Cialdini?
No, it's a Belgian girl that wrote, Caroline Lamarck wrote the book.
Oh, great, okay.
Quite sure on the title, yeah.
I'll add that because there's another old classic by Robert Cialdini. I think it's called The Persuasion, The Psychology of Influence, I believe, which is also on that topic, which is really excellent.
Rings a bell, yes.
My last question here, if I find myself in Belgium going to one of your conferences, what is the one pub I have to visit for a good beer?
Whoa. I'm living in a small town where not so much is going on, so we always have to move to a bigger town, whatever. And unfortunately, we don't go out that much anymore. But I'm more into, well, in the past, one passion led to the other passion. That's where I'm at with the data stuff. But it all started with my passion for music, and I started DJing, and I have a huge vinyl collection. And for organizing that vinyl collection, I started programming my own database management stuff and an early CRM to keep track of the discotheques where I was asking for a position or an in-house residence, about 30 years ago. So that's how it all started. So I'm more into that kind of stuff. And one big recommendation, if you have the chance to visit it, is it's a big event in Belgium. It's called Tomorrowland. And that's the biggest house party which you can imagine, but with a decor and a scene and a light show while people are really traveling from all over the world back again to small Belgium. So that's another thing we're pretty proud of and where you could go to. The big events we have, but the musical festivals here in Belgium.
What kind of music do they play?
Well, Tomorrowland, that's really house music. So it's fun to see that so many people come to house music, whereas, let's say, 20 years ago, I started playing house music was coming up, and a lot of discotheques were refusing that house music, because you had a lot of drugs which were related and involved with that house scene. So it's a bit a shame that if you're an early adopter, you have to fight hard. And now it's a commodity, and people really like that. And it's amazing to see that you can gather about 80,000 people a day around this kind of music. So that's crazy to see.
Now for my last question, Yves, where can our audience find out more about you, the blog you publish, and the work that you do?
Well, the blog, that's easy. They go to 7wdata.be or .com. They all come to the same place. And to learn about my work I do, they can visit me. I think the best position is on LinkedIn, where I have a pretty complete profile. And they just pop me a message, and we can start a discussion if they want to talk about anything about data or music-related stuff or influential marketing. Happy to discuss about those topics.
And what about your consulting practice? If they wanted to reach out to you, where could they reach? Where can they find you?
Well, either they drop me an email at eve@evemulkers.be. Or they just visit my, again, LinkedIn profile, and they ping me, and that's where we can talk further.
That's great. Thank you so much for your time today. Much appreciated, and hopefully we'll get to do a round two as well.
Okay, Mike. Thanks very much for the invite, and it was very nice talking to you.
Thank you so much, and till next time. This was a DeModlo conversation with a data warehouse expert, Yves Mulkers. Thank you so much.